Transmitting sound. Download complete. Now launching audio stream. The Kelly Alexander Show.
It's a busy week as we chat with artist Patrick Lehman about his rising music career. His latest album is called Electric Soul Kitchen Volume 2, and it features some great tracks like Stop Pretending. We then chat with our almost mother of the year, Casey Savage, about her fear of the internet and why she watches her three boys like a hawk when they log onto the www. We then chat with 19-year-old Australian DJ sensation Walden. He talks about being on the same roster as Skrillex and Martin Solveig and what he wants to accomplish in the world of music.
Capture your need for sound.
Joining us on the show right now is Canadian multi-instrumentalist, singer-songwriter, and producer Patrick Lehman. He's going to talk to us about his brand new CD, Electric Soul Kitchen Volume 2, as well as his love of music and what's going on with his upcoming tour. Patrick, welcome to the Kelly Alexander Show.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
So I wanted to ask you, you started writing your own songs as a teenager. Did you always know that you were going to have a career in music? Was that the plan?
I grew up listening to a lot of different kind of music in the house. My parents always had stuff playing around the house. I picked up the guitar when I was quite young. I don't know if I knew that I was going to have a career in music, but I think as I became a teenager, I definitely realized it's something I love to do, and I'd probably have to work very hard to make it be a career. And so far, it's been going well. It's definitely a lot of hard work, but it's always been a dream of mine to make it happen, but I guess I never knew if it would or not. Let's put it that way.
And when it comes to your career, because, you know, I've spoken to so many artists, you know, over the last couple of years, and it, like you said, it is so much hard work. I think some people don't realize how much work actually goes into it. Do you have, like, for quote unquote, like a backup plan, or are you going full tilt, you're going to make this your life's work?
Yeah, well, for a long time, I mean, even up until, like, I'd say, like, a year or two ago, I was thinking, okay, well, you know, if this doesn't work out, or, sometimes you work hard at something and it just doesn't pan out, you know. But in the last couple of years, I've definitely decided that this is it for me. This is what I'm doing. Whether I become huge or not huge, whatever, you know, sell a million records or don't sell a million records. The more shows that I do and the more albums that I make, I'm garnering new fans all the time. And I'm sticking with it. Whether I like it or not, I tell my friends all the time, this is what I'm meant to do with my life. So hopefully success. But, you continue every day and you work hard and you hope for the best, basically.
How has your family support been? Because I'm assuming that's very important to give you like a boost when things maybe aren't going well.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. And I'm extremely close with my family. And that's a big reason why I'm still in Montreal doing music here. They're amazing. They support me constantly. What's good too is that they're very realistic with me too. I mean, I don't think they don't pump, these big dreams into my head. They've always told me that if this is what you want, go for it, but realize it's going to be a lot of hard work and it's going to take a long time. You know, when you don't have an uncle who's in the music business or, you know, a huge connection or something, you're going to have to work really hard. And they've made that clear to me from the beginning, but I think that's the best thing they could have done, is because they took that element of like the dream out of it, and then realized that if you want to make it a reality, you have to work hard at anything you do, really. So they're definitely a huge support for me. Yeah.
Now, when it comes to your music, when and where do you sit down to write music? Do you write when you're on tour? Do you write when you're at home? Like, how does that all sort of pan out?
Well, right now we're actually we're sort of on a quasi tour. We're back in Montreal every week, but every weekend and every like Thursday to Sunday, we're basically out. And last weekend we were in New York City doing a couple dates, and so we're back and forth. So I don't have tons of time to be writing right now. I used to do a lot of writing just at my house in my bedroom, just sit down with a guitar or a keyboard. Now it's kind of whenever something pops in my head, I'll grab a napkin or I'll grab my cell phone, or I'll write it down wherever I can, basically, and then hopefully continue it later on. Anywhere we can, really. I mean, inspiration comes from anything I find for myself. So, whether it's on my laptop or, like I said, a napkin from a diner somewhere, wherever we are at that time, and just write it down and keep it and hold it for later. Right now, basically, we're just focusing on performing live. So writing has kind of taken a little bit of a backseat for a little while. But hopefully I'll be doing some writing in the future soon.
Can you talk to us about your love of hip-hop, jazz, and soul, and how you've managed to, fuse those sounds together to create your own unique sound?
Yeah, I definitely. Well, I mean, I grew up listening to hip hop and probably the more popular side of hip hop. And then as I got a little bit older, I discovered groups like The Roots and Common and Kanye West. Obviously, he's probably the most popular one out of the bunch. But I mean, I always grew up listening to rock and roll in the house, and I studied jazz in university. So I don't know if it was such a conscious effort to mix all of them together. I mean, I've always wanted to kind of, I mean, just to put it simply, I just kind of want to play the music that I like, and I want to make music that I would want to listen to. And whether that becomes more jazzier or more urban or more of a rock sound, I mean, on the new album that I just finished a few months ago, I mean, there's a little mix of everything on the album, and that was kind of my goal from the beginning. So, I mean, I guess it is sort of a conscious effort to put it in there. But I think basically what it is whatever you listen to and you're influenced by, it's going to come out whether you like it or not, you know? So, I mean, I'm happy with the way the album turned out because there is a little bit of all of those influences in every song. And so far, the reception for the album has been great. So, I mean, I couldn't ask for more.
You've had the opportunity to share the stage with some pretty notable singers like Elvis Costello and Daniel Lanois, Sam Roberts, Bedouin Soundclash, Holly Cole. Can you tell us what those experiences were like for you?
Yeah, well, that was actually a couple years ago in the Montreal Jazz Fest. I was a part of the big event that year, which was a tribute to Paul Simon. And so those other artists were on stage. I mean, I should say I was on stage with those other artists, obviously. And it was an amazing, amazing experience. At that point, I was a little bit younger, and I was still pretty fresh into the industry. And to be rubbing shoulders with those people, and most of them were amazing. They were very friendly and very welcoming to conversation, and it was just amazing to watch them perform and see how they carried themselves also around the production and the days leading up to the production. So I mean, for me, that was an amazing learning experience, an amazing performing experience. I couldn't have asked for more, and it went great. I think it was actually still to date the most popular and successful outdoor free show that the festival has ever done. So I mean, to be part of that is amazing.
Joining us on the Kelly Alexander Show is singer, songwriter, and producer Patrick Lehman. Make sure to check out his website, patricklehmanmusic.com. What was the best advice that you've been given so far in your career, and who gave it to you?
I think the best advice, that's a good question. I don't know if I can think of the best line right now on the spot, but I had a professor in university who made it very clear that to be in the music business, it's, especially as a songwriter, and if you want to be an artist, it's very personal, and it's very, you're very in touch with your emotions, with your lyrics and your performing and being on stage, but it is a business also. And there's a whole side of it that needs to be run like a business, you know, putting your programming, your touring together, your image, doing photos, just even developing artwork for your album when you put something out like that, arranging music. There's a whole side of it that it is very much a business. And I think to be successful, you have to understand both sides of it. And I think in the last couple of years, that's really what I've been trying to do, is just learning a little bit of every part of the industry, as well as getting out there and performing and, you know, honing that side of the craft as well. So I think the best advice I would say is probably just get to know the business that you want to be in, you know, get to know every single side of it. And that way, if you have a little bit of knowledge of every part of the industry, then, I mean, you'll be better for it. So
is it hard for you to embrace the business aspect of things? Because I know for myself, I'm sort of in the same boat as you. Like, I would rather, or, you know, a huge part of me wants to just focus on, you know, finding my guests and doing my interviews and crafting all that sort of stuff and putting my show together. But just like you, like, I have a business side of it where I have to promote the show and all that sort of stuff. And I know there's days where I don't feel like doing that part. Do you have those days?
I have those days. Yes, almost every day I have that day. But, you know, I mean, I think when because what I'm doing right now too, like you're doing a lot of the work yourself, you know? So, I mean, it's really, you know, when you wake up in the morning, if you're tired or you had a hard day or a big day, or like we came back from New York and then on Monday I was right back to work doing bookings and working on promotional stuff for the future. I mean, it's fine if you don't want to do it, but if you don't do it, it doesn't get done, you know? So, I mean, obviously there's days where there's piles of work to do, but I think you realize as time goes on that if you don't do that work, then nothing will be coming in the future, you know? So, I mean, you have to kind of just buckle down. And a good idea, too, is just getting a good team around you of people who will support you and work with you, and you all have the same goal, basically, working towards the same goal. So, I mean, yeah, it gets tough. It's a lot of work. A lot of people don't really, like a lot of my friends don't realize, you know, how much time goes into just planning a tour or planning an album. When we recorded the album last year, me and my musicians, I think it's the biggest creative project I've ever done to date. And I mean, I definitely am proud of it, but I needed to maybe step away from the studio for a few months and take a little break and kind of charge my batteries and refresh for the next time I go. I mean, it takes a huge part out of you when you do work on a project that big. But, I mean, the goal is to be proud of it in the end. So you push as hard as you can, and then when it's finished, it's finished. So,
speaking of your album, the latest one that came out, Electric Soul Kitchen Volume 2, do you have a song on there that is your baby, or are they all your babies? Because I know it's hard to choose, but is there one that really speaks to you most of the time?
Well, yeah, I mean, people ask me that sometimes. I think if I had to give an answer, I'd probably say the fourth track, OI. For me, that was speaking of different styles on the album, that one really does stand out of the other ones because it's more of like a R&B doo-wop type of song, or that was the influence for the song. That one, there's a lot that went into it, a lot of the arrangements, and there's violin and just three backup singers and guitar and then all of my vocals. So that one kind of, I mean, just as far as working on the tunes, that one was really special to me. But all the songs, I mean, I wrote all of them and I produced all of them. So they're really all like my babies, I guess you would say. But I guess that one, if I had to pick, that one probably stand out for me.
Do you have an artist or a group out in the world right now that you would just, you know, be so excited to have the chance to collaborate with?
You know who I really like? I really like Grace Potter. Grace Potter and the Nocturnals. They're actually from Vermont, and they've been on the up and up for the last couple of years, touring, doing tons of touring, and they actually do a little festival down in Vermont. Well, I shouldn't say a little festival. They do their own festival in Vermont every August or September, and I'm trying really hard to get into that this year, actually, because Sam Roberts was in it last year, and they give support to a lot of Montreal acts as well. So, and they're going to be in Montreal, I think, in February, early February, we're going to go see them. So I think that's an excellent act. And that's a perfect example for me of someone who's worked really hard at it and succeeded and now is touring like crazy and has all the support from bigger artists. And so, yeah, that's someone I'm the last couple albums of Grace Potter and the Nocturnals I've been crazy about.
Speaking of, you know, these tour dates and stuff and seeing people and wanting to get involved in this type of festival and everything, what can people expect when they go see you live? What's your stage show like?
You know what, stage show, as far as I'm concerned, I think we're still building it as well, too. I mean, I know for myself, when I first started singing, I was terrified of the stage, and I think there's a big part of me that's still trying to get over that. But right now we're amped up. I mean, we're performing so much in different cities as well. We just did a big show in Montreal in mid-December, and we filmed it for a DVD. So that'll be out, I think, in the spring sometime. We're trying to do that for like April. And there you can see like our stage presence right there. We worked really hard on that show. I think we try to, similar to the names of the albums, we're trying to make it very electric. I'm calling my sound Electric Soul because it's soulful, but it is amped up and there's a lot of energy in our show. That being said, there's always a couple ballads that we do and we try to tone it down a little bit too. So I guess we're trying to put a little bit for everybody in the show, but definitely high energy.
How important is social media to you?
Oh, it's everything. I mean, at this point, that's the best way to promote yourself when you're an independent artist. It's the best way to connect with your fans. I've had so many fans reach out and people reach out just sending us messages of, please come play here, or we loved this when you did that song at the show. And I mean, it's the best way to connect with the people directly. I mean, there's no middleman. They can send you a message right away. They can find you on Twitter and Facebook, and we're on all of those social media sites, and it's the best way for them to connect. And for me, it's a good idea to see what people are liking, what they're not liking, and if there's areas that we haven't played yet. And I mean, so it's very important right now. Yeah.
Now, what's in store for you this coming year? And well, I used to be able to say, you know, what's coming up in the next 2 years, but now everything is so quick and fast paced that it seems like we got to focus on the next 6 months or the next year. So what's up for Patrick Lehman and the band coming up this year?
Well, right now, me and my musicians, we're on the road back and forth. We're doing our winter tour, and that'll wrap up in April in Toronto. And then we'll probably do a couple dates in Montreal in May. I think we're going to take a little bit of time off and put together our summer tour. And that will be pretty similar to the dates of the winter tour. We'll be going down to New York and New Brunswick and Toronto and Montreal. This Thursday, we're actually going to Quebec City, so that'll be fun. And I'm actually working currently on trying to do at the same time like a remix album. So I'm going to be taking about 6 or 7 of the songs from the Electric Soul Kitchen Volume 2 and doing remixes. So you like electro sounding stuff, hip hop stuff, and putting that out in the summertime. And then we have the DVD coming out in the spring as well. And that was of a show we did at El Patro Vis in our hometown of Montreal. So all those things put together. I also have the album coming out in the Netherlands in the spring. We just signed a deal last year with a company in the Netherlands. So possibly going out there to do some tour, but that's not totally confirmed yet. So there's a lot of things, kind of four or five different things always going on at once. But I mean, that's what's great about putting out an album. You put it out and then here we go, you know, so.
Do you have any goals or plans to expand like further overseas? Like, because, for example, we're on radio stations right now in Australia and Malaysia and Japan and Singapore. Do you have any plans to, you know, hopefully pick up new fans maybe in that part of the world at some point?
Definitely. I mean, my idea is to just go as far away and come back as much as I can. So, I mean, we want to play anywhere we can, and I'd like the album to be out as many places as I can. I know it's right now it is out in the UK and some in China and Brazil and a whole bunch of different countries online on iTunes and all those sites. I think right now, especially as an independent artist, it's very important to do everything step by step. So I think maybe for my next album or maybe for the remixes album, I will sort of expand a little bit more overseas. I mean, it's definitely a goal of ours, but it's, you know, bit by bit, we're going to get there, I think.
Fantastic. And before I let you go, you know, you're so talented and you are, you know, able to play different instruments and you've got, you know, you, like you said, your musicians going on. Do you ever have plans in the long term to maybe help bring other artists along and help them launch their own career?
Yeah, I've actually been toying with the idea of maybe putting together like a little festival in the future. I don't know if that'll be next year or what, but I would love to do something like that, even just start really small at first, do it in Montreal one or two nights, and then hopefully just every year expand it and sort of be like a hometown show at the end of the year at the same time, and every year have more and more artists be a part of it. But that's definitely something that I'm kind of just keeping in the back of my mind, and when I do have some time to develop it, I'm going to do that. But I would love to do that. I mean, but I think Montreal, as far as my hometown, Montreal, we've got a ton of festivals already. I don't think there's any room for another festival right now, but that's definitely something I'd like to do. Or maybe a tour, you know, maybe a tour and bring out a couple artists with us and hit up a bunch of different cities all together. That might be a lot of fun too. So yeah, there's a lot of ideas there. I think it's just a matter of developing them and putting it out at the right time.
Patrick, that's awesome. And thank you so much for your time. And we wish you the best of luck.
Thank you.
That was Patrick Lehman. Again, for more information about Patrick and his band, check out patricklehmanmusic.com.
past some days and got amazed that I forgot you. And now to torture myself, I regain my health. I catch myself.
Almost Mother of the Year, Casey Savage. Casey has an amazing take on motherhood and all that that entails. So make sure to check out her blog, almostmotheroftheyear.blogspot.com. Casey, welcome back to the Kelly Alexander Show.
Thank you. Happy 2013, Kelly. It's going to be a good one.
I feel the same way as you and right back at you. And so, you know, I know we're sort of safely ensconced in January and sort of heading towards February, but I do have to take a bit of a turn backwards. And I just want to ask you how you survived the holidays with your three boys.
I can already feel my blood pressure rising as soon as you mentioned the word holiday. Oh my gosh, it just honestly, no one threw up though. So
okay.
I know in the past we've talked about no family Christmas is complete unless a child throws up somewhere. I mean, I was about to say inappropriately, but there's never a good spot to throw up, I suppose. Usually it's in a relative's vehicle. So this year we had none of that. Knock on wood. Hopefully the same will happen this year. Tensions were a little high. I mean, let's face it, the holidays, it's just a recipe for disaster. Cramming everyone you know into one room for days on end and having boxes of wine. And the only reason I say a box of wine is because my mom's from Montreal, and although that is a classy town, for some reason there's a huge access to boxed wines that I don't see anywhere else in this country. So the boxes of wine were flowing.
Fancy.
So were the opinions. So were the tensions. All I can say is next year I'm going to Florida. Whether or not that's true, that's a story I'm telling my mom, and I'm sticking with it.
Very nice. So I have to ask you then, is it mainly like your mom that causes the tension, or people around her don't embrace her as much as they should?
You know what? The problem is actually me, I would say, more than anything else. Everyone else is probably the exact same, but I'm just hypersensitive and protective. I'm in my domain. Don't mess with my domain. Rare!
You've gotten so much more fierce since university, I have to tell you.
Well, it's the new me for 2013.
I love it. It's very good. And so do the boys try to, like, do the boys sort of stay calm and are just in their, like, present zone and sort of doing their
thing? No. Everything is off. You know how I'm crazy about nutrition
right.
and health with my kids?
Yes.
They are eating crap behind my back, left, right, and center. Relatives are shoveling it into their faces. Then they're bouncing off the walls. Then they're acting like Chucky. Like, literally, it's as if their heads are spinning on their shoulders and they could attack me in the night. So I'm just happy that they're back in the old mode of eating proper healthy foods from the Canada Food Guide. That
Fancy.
Just makes me really happy.
Now I want to ask you, when do things sort of go off the rails? Because I know, just as for me being an adult, once you sort of cross that threshold into December, it's very easy to get into this mindset of like, oh, it's Christmas time, even if you're like on December 2nd. So, like,
well, I'm one of those people where the transition, you could almost see it in a movie montage. I'm just, you know, arm in arm, galloping down the street. And that's basically as soon as Thanksgiving is over in October. I get into Christmas mode and I build it up in my head like so many of us do. It's the most wonderful time of the year. I'm stringing the lights, I'm stuffing the stockings. I'm baking the cookies, and then you can insert that record scratch right about here. That's when it all goes completely south. And I pretty much, you know, abandon any form of personal hygiene. I cuddle myself in the fetal position in my room, and I hope for it all to be over with. And that usually starts at December 1st until January 1st.
Very nice. Okay. Because I'm
assuming
that, because I don't have children myself. I have, you know, my nieces and my nephew. But I just know as me, myself, as an adult, like, and it's weird how it's like this frame of mind where, like, December is great, you know, you feel very festive. But I think there's that whole thing, like, where it's like a mental thing where you feel like you're tired because it's the end of the year. And so I feel like things just slip.
And it's the pressure.
Yes,
the pressure to be festive.
Yes.
It's crushing.
There's a lot going on. So there's a slippery slope to hell is what you're telling me for the holidays.
Pretty much.
Okay. And I wanted to
I ended up literally with a tangled pair of dollar store necklaces, the kind that have the Christmas light necklaces that blink over and over and over. I ended up wearing just that and huddling under my covers, just trembling and crying. That's what happened on December 25th.
Nice. Now, I wanted to ask you, the boys, I'm assuming, were off for 2 weeks. Was it a long 2 weeks, or did you, like, do you have to keep them busy, or are they sort of good at entertaining themselves?
The best part about kids, which I really wish adults, I don't know how we lose this. We get so lame and so boring as we age. Kids, or at least my boys, if there is even so much as a flake of snow falling from the sky, they are in their snowsuits at 5:59 in the morning, and they will not come in until they need food, a washroom. Even the washroom is debatable. Sometimes it just, you know, they take care of business in the backyard on a tree, and then they just stay out there all day long. It's awesome.
That is great.
I love snow.
That's awesome. You need to move to a more snowy climate then.
I know, that's the problem. We had snow, thankfully, for those 2 weeks, and then now we're flake-free, and the kids are back inside complaining about the lack of snow. So I think I'm going to move to, I don't know, Kappa's Casing or Alert or the Arctic Circle or Antarctica. I need to find a community that would embrace us, however, and not many people welcome a family with three boys, I'll be honest.
Joining us on the Kelly Alexander Show, our Almost Mother of the Year, Casey Savage. Again, make sure to check out her blog, almostmotheroftheyear.blogspot.com. Now, I want to switch gears a little bit, even though it does have to do with the holidays. And speaking of technology, now I know your boys, like, you keep them on a tight leash, if you will, when it comes to technology and all that sort of stuff. Can you explain your stance on that and the internet?
Well, personally, I am afraid of the internet, so I take those fears. I'm serious. You can look up fuzzy kitten, okay? Something that, how can you go wrong with fuzzy kitten? And guaranteed, out of the top 10 fuzzy kitten websites, something is disgusting and dirty. So I don't want my kids exposed to that. They're way too young. My eldest is 9. There is stuff on the internet that I am personally terrified of seeing myself. So I tread very cautiously when I'm searching for anything on Google, for example. So there's no way my kids are going to be left alone. But it's all around them. All their friends have technology. They want more technology. They know how to, it's almost as if in utero, I don't know if it's from the Wi-Fi radiation, I don't know what it is, but they all are born just with like these thumbs that are just, you know, texting their brains out. They don't even need to be shown how. I'll sit them down at a keyboard and say, now, here's what you need to do. And they'll say, get out of here, we know what to do. So I don't know how to know this stuff, but there's no way my kids are surfing the internet or even flicking through television. I mean, I see stuff on TV, you know, even things like, you know, now that we have access to things like HBO, where basically it's like a movie channel, right? So there's just too much stuff out there for kids, and I want to make sure, I know they're going to see it. I'm not naive. I'm not stupid. I know that, you know, any day now they're going to be exposed to those things, but the longer I can insulate them from nudity, violence, who knows what else is out there, nudity and violence together, the better. So I'm trying my best. It's tough. It's tough being the warden in this jail they call home.
Now, what is their access in the home? Do you have several computers, or is there like one area where they could hop to get on?
Well, there's no way they have access to anything involving the internet unless they ask me to set it up for them, because everything is password protected. And and over the holidays, we cracked, because this is what happened. We always get our kids the lamest gifts for Christmas. I go out with good intentions. I buy educational gifts. They open them. They are not excited. They think Santa is one big loser because every year they get these boring gifts. So this year, finally, Brad, my husband, he couldn't handle it anymore. He cracked, and it was literally the 23rd of December. We're wrapping everything, and he says, you know what? I can't do this. I cannot watch them open these lame gifts for one more year. They never get anything that's on their list, their wish list to Santa, because it all starts with iPod, iPhone. Why does my five-year-old need an iPhone? He doesn't even know our phone number. Who is he calling? No, he doesn't need that, right? So finally, Brad cracked. He went out. He got our eldest son an iPod Touch. He's been every year that he could even verbalize the words iPod Touch. He has asked for that, and every year, let down. So he went out, he got him the iPod Touch. I proceeded to disable everything on the iPod Touch, and then we wrapped it up, and he opened it Christmas morning, all excited, because his friends have iPod. Everyone has an iPod Touch. So he turns it on. Mom, where is Facebook? Where is Twitter? Where is Safari? Where is iTunes? Like, everything was wiped off there. Because I thought, you know, if he wants to use these things, if he's going to be huddled up in his room with this device, I want to make sure that I know what he's using and I can supervise and control that. So he has to come see myself, to type in my secret password to be able to re-enable those things that he desires so much.
You are awesome. You are like a commandant in the army. You are just keeping it real.
Well, let's face it. We all know how this is going to turn out. Anyone listening to this knows my kids are going to end up rebelling at some point, and I will end up on one of those, you know, late night, late breaking news stories about a mom going insane and escaping to Vegas and trashing a hotel room. That will be me.
I want to ask you, how does Brad handle this? Like, obviously, he's the one that cracked, so he, you know, has brought the device into the house. But what was his stance on you disabling all the quote-unquote fun?
Well, he's not really involved in tech. It's crazy. He does work in the technology sector, but he agrees with me. There's no way our kids are going to be willy-nilly up in their rooms, all of them antisocial, sitting there on their own little personal devices, looking at naked ladies. No, there's not a chance that is happening. Even if they don't know naked ladies exist on the internet, which I'm not sure they do or do not, they will probably find a naked lady on the internet within 4 seconds of Googling, you know, anything. I cannot think of a single word in the English language that cannot be misconstrued and somehow lead to a naked lady. So I'm trying to protect them from that.
I see. Now, I wanted to ask you as well, I think it's great that you actually want to have such control over them, especially because they are young. They're all under 10. And I mean, some of the things that I hear about from people that have kids that are 12, 13, I think it's obscene. So I think you're on the right path. But do you ever have a concern that when they do get access to more of this stuff, like just being online and the freedom to sort of check things out on their own, do you think that because you've kept them on such a strict diet that they're going to almost, like, you know, overeat, if you will?
Well, see, I've got a twofold plan in my mind. So although they're not allowed to access any of this stuff now, at the same time, I educate them about the media. You know, if we are watching something together on TV, I'll say, now, you know the difference between real and not real, right? And I'll explain, because I do work in TV and I studied TV in university, I feel like maybe I have more insight into that than anyone else would who maybe doesn't work in that field. And I'll say, you know what, kids, you think that that person's really hurt, but they're just pretending, and this is what acting's all about. And then I'll give them a demo of me acting, which is never pretty, but just to get the point across. I'll be like, now look, you pretend you kick me, and now I'm lying on the ground, and then now you video it with my iPad, and then we watch it. Look, see, that's pretend, right? So I'm trying to get that through their minds, that they have a good foundation, a good base, and they know that entertainment and reality are two separate things. That, well, unless you're watching Honey Boo Boo, which I don't even know what that is, but I am not watching that. And if that is the first show that they ever tune into unsupervised, I quit being a parent.
Very nice.
I can't handle it.
No.
But remember when we were young, Kelly?
Yes.
I mean, I would go into my classroom. I was probably my eldest son's age, 9. There they would be sitting, the stack of National Geographic back issues. Do you remember that? You'd look at them, all tempting with their yellow covers.
Yes.
You'd flip it open. Every issue, no matter what month, no matter what year, had the tribal ladies with no tops on.
Yes.
That was my first exposure to
naked ladies.
Nudie culture, to nudie culture. But that at least was, you know, unappealing.
Right.
So you just, you know, you had no desire to. That's actually why I've never read a National Geographic since. Very bad advertising on their part.
Yes, it was not working out. You know what's funny is the show that I was allowed to watch, I think, as my first experience of even staying up a bit later in the evening, was the only night I was allowed to stay up later, which meant like till 8:30, was on Tuesday nights. And I still remember this all this year later. This is how much my parents had an effect on me. And it was really my mother on this one. I was allowed to watch Lauren Green's New Wilderness.
Mutual of Omaha. I watched the Mutual of Omaha, whatever it was called, Wilderness show. It was Sundays right before Walt Disney came on at 6:30. Why were we eating so early, come to think of it? Why was I watching TV at 6?
I don't know.
What
I just
was
think
going
it's,
on there?
I point out to my mother, though, about the Lauren Green thing. I'm like, you know, it's funny that, you know, she didn't want me watching, let's say, Dallas or whatever, you know, like to see that. But yet she would let me watch cheetahs, you know, eating a wildebeest as my entertainment before going to sleep, which I just think is funny.
Yeah, or procreating.
Right. Yeah, so there was all of that going on. So times have changed. And
no wonder I've got problems.
Yeah. And before I let you bounce, I just wanted to ask you, I guess, you do have 3 boys. You know, you said your oldest is 9, 9 and a half. What are the other 2 saying about this technology coming into the house? Like, do they want their own iPod Touch?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they do. They do. And actually, this is so sad. My youngest son found an empty aluminum lid off an aluminum lunchbox. And I caught him pretending he was an iPad. Like, he was sliding his finger across the top of it and talking to it. Like, it actually, some people would almost, that could bring tears to their eyes. Like, what a poor, deprived child that he's up in his room with an aluminum lunchbox lid, sliding his finger across it, pretending that he's playing Angry Birds.
Nice.
But I'm like, you know what? I'm going to turn this sad story around, Kelly. I'm going to say that he has a great imagination. A great imagination. And that pushes me even further in my defense against technology with kids. Like, look at that imagination. A lunchbox lid as an iPad. That's awesome.
And this is why you are our almost mother of the year.
Almost.
Almost.
I feel like I'm getting further away from there. But still almost.
Almost. Very good. Well, Casey, thank you so much. We're so happy to have you back on the show. We can't wait to have you on again.
Thank you. It's my pleasure.
Again, that's our Almost Mother of the Year, Casey Savage. Check out her blog. It's hysterical. almostmotheroftheyear.blogspot.ca. You can also learn more about her on our website, kellyalexandershow.com.
It's the Kelly Alexander Show.
Joining us on the show is Australian DJ sensation Walden. Walden has been making music since he was a young teenager, and he continues to advance at warp speed, considering the fact that he's not even 20 years old yet, and he's been signed to Big Beat Records alongside the likes of Skrillex, Chromeo, and Martin Solvig. Walden, welcome to the Kelly Alexander Show.
Hey, thank you for having me.
So, Walden, how did you actually get into DJing and producing music?
It was actually in a school excursion. They went to this powerhouse museum, and the instructor there showed us this music-making program. And when I saw that, I was fascinated with it. So I bought the program, I bought it home. And yeah, I don't know, it just kind of grew from there. It was really a hobby until I was about 14. And that's when I started taking it a little bit more seriously. And yeah, I don't know, it just grew from there.
Now, being from Australia, is your music influenced by your awesome and gorgeous surroundings?
Partially, yes.
And do you feel where do you get your inspiration? Do you need sort of like alone time in your studio, or do you take, you know, as your life rolls along and then you sort of transcribe that to your music?
Being alone helps, but I guess most of my inspiration normally comes from sometimes pictures on the internet or certain places or scenes. Then, of course, the music that I hear, or, you know, I pretty much get inspiration from everything, I think, that I hear.
Who do you look to as influences, both, you know, on the DJ side of things and then on the music production side of things?
DJing, I'd probably have to say Laidback Luke or A-Track. They're my favorite DJs. They're so creative and they're so different and innovative in how they play music out loud to a crowd. So I really aspire, I guess, to be like them in terms of their skill and their level to get a crowd going. In terms of producing, I don't know, a lot of people, Axwell, Artie, they have to be my biggest ones. I really like the sound of Mike Snow. He's quite interesting for me. Yeah, just plenty of producers.
Now, I know that you talked about the program that you got into to sort of help you get going with music production and all that sort of stuff. Were you actually an instrumentalist before, or has everything sort of been through like computer-based programming?
I did play instruments, but never to a high level of degree. Like I did violin, and then I did like a little bit of piano, but mostly the music sort of came more through the technology and the ability to just create sounds and learn from the program.
And have you, you know, used that basis, like you said, you did know a little bit about piano and stuff. Has that helped you to create things easier with regards to the computer programming?
Oh, definitely. I actually had a jazz pianist, and I asked him if he could, you know, teach me all the different scales and chords and you know, how they all work together. And that definitely helped me, you know, in terms of how I created melodies, how I created chords and the combinations of all that.
What's more important to you? Is it the melody, or do you need to have like a rockin' beat behind, like, or is it amalgamation of both?
Yeah, I think it would be both. I mean, both are equally important for me. Like, I want it to sound amazing on the speakers, and the sound to be clear and concise. But you know, it also has to have feeling and an emotion for me as well. That's really important in a house song.
Now, there's going to be kids that are listening to this around the world, and they're going to be like, "Wow, how do I get to do what Walden is doing?" And again, you're not even 20 years old yet. So, can you give them an idea, like, you know, when you started to take things seriously? You said was at the age of 14. Like, how many hours are we talking about a day that you're sort of putting into learning and getting better?
If you enjoy it that much, or you get into it, you don't really think about the hours that you're doing. It's just, you know, you do it when you have time, so you sit down, you try different things, you listen to a lot of other artists and get inspired. And you know, I guess really practice makes perfect. But yeah, I guess staying committed and being consistent with it is a good way to go about it, I guess.
How did you actually get signed to Big Beat? Like, especially being on such a high-octane roster?
When I was about 16, I put up a profile on this website called Reverb Nation. And a couple of months later, one of the interns from Atlantic Records emailed me and said, "Hey, you know, we're interested in your music. We'd like to talk to you and get to know you better." And yeah, it just kind of grew from there. I sent them songs and they would send back feedback. And eventually we decided, you know, to try our first release. And then later on, that kind of led to being signed with them.
And how does it feel to know that you're on a roster with such people as, like, Skrillex and Martin Solveig?
Surreal. Very strange for me.
Have you got to meet any of them yet?
No, unfortunately not. Though I did see Martin Solveig live in Sydney last year, which is really, really cool. I haven't met them yet.
And how does it feel, like, again, you know, are you still 18 years old? You're still 18, right?
I'm 19.
You're 19. So, you know, in certain places around the world, like specifically in the States, you can't even get into a club technically, but now you're spinning at all these clubs. What does it feel like to be, you know, moving people and letting them sort of escape and get into your music and your mixing?
Really weird, because they're all like 5 years older than me, generally. But I'm not, it's, yeah, I feel very young. But no, it's nice. I mean, the American crowds are very different from the Australian ones. I'm not really sure how yet, but I don't know. It's. I think it's a good experience. I'm really enjoying my stay here and just, I guess, getting a feel for what the Americans, you know, the people here in Canada as well, you know, what they respond to, what they don't respond to, what kind of sound moves them. That you know, it's really cool.
Can you talk to us a little bit about your most recent release, In Tropical, and what's that? What it's about and how you came to it.
Well, I actually started with a vocal sample for that one, and I kind of created a chord and a melody around it, and the track just sort of grew from there. I went to percussion, you know, I added a lot of things. It was a weird name. I don't really remember how I came up with it. I guess I was kind of thinking of the word tropical, and then somehow that turned into entropia, which is bizarre, but...
And, you know, now that you, you've been getting exposure to, you know, different audiences like the American audiences that we've talked about, and now you're doing a gig in Canada, do you think that for your notoriety to increase, you are going to have to leave Australia and maybe go to the States or maybe go to Europe to really keep going? Or do you think you always want to be based out of Australia?
That's not really something I've decided yet, to be honest. I'd love to move here for a couple of years and work here in either Canada or America. They're probably the most likely countries I'd move to. I'd love to travel to Europe as well. But at this point in time, when or if I'll be doing that, I can't really say right now. But I'd love to. New York would probably be my number one city to move to and live.
Now, before I let you go, I have to ask you this, because social media is so important in the last couple of years. You know, most people are on it. How do you feel about it? Are you addicted to it? And do you find that being on social media and talking to your fans, you know, helps sort of raise your brand and also brings you new fans?
Yeah, definitely. I think that being active on social media and letting people know that you're there and, you know, you're happy to talk to them about music, I think, it, you know, they appreciate that, and they're more likely to pay attention to you, you know, if you're willing to give back to them like that. So I think, you know, social media definitely plays a monumental role in regards to that. I wouldn't say I'm addicted, but I do try to be as active as possible, you know, like replying to people and letting them know what's going on and when new music is coming. I think it's a really cool way to talk to my fans.
Now, before I let you go again, what's up next for you? Like, does the tour continue? Do you have a lot more club dates? And what can we expect from you in the next, like, 6 months?
Well, actually, Montreal is my last show. So I'll be going back to Sydney. I'll probably be doing more gigs in Sydney and around Australia. I will most likely be back for WMC in March and probably studio time afterwards in LA. So that's sort of as far as we've gone for this year. I'm not sure what will be happening near the end, but I'm excited to see what happens.
Fantastic. Well, Walden, thank you so much for your time. And I know that I can let the fans know that they can find you, you know, on Twitter at Walden Official. So thank you so much.
Awesome. No, thanks for having me.
That's Walden again. Don't forget to check him out. He's got some great releases. And again, on Twitter at Walden Official.
I think you. So far, so good. I guess you know. You know it's true. In heaven with you, I feel you. So far, so good.
Remix. more than just a couple times.
Alexander Show. Thank you so much to our guests, Patrick Lehman, Casey Savage, and Walden. Here is your thought-provoking quote of the week, this time coming from James Allen. The vision that you glorify in your mind, the ideal that you enthrone in your heart, this you will build your life by, and this you will become. Now, next week on the show, we welcome psychologist and professor Dr. Frank Farley back to the show to talk about Lance Armstrong and his final admission of guilt involving taking banned substances to win several of the Tour de France races, as well as other competitions. Dr. Farley is going to analyze Lance's behavior and give us some insight into why he did what he did and what it could mean for Lance moving forward. Now, don't forget to check us out on our social media on Twitter at @KAlexanderShow. On Facebook, Kelly Alexander Show, and online, KellyAlexanderShow.com. Don't forget as well, you can see all of our celebrity interviews on our YouTube channel, youtube.com/KellyAlexanderShow. Have an awesome week. Any comments or questions? Kelly@KellyAlexanderShow.com. You and I'll chat soon.